In his 2024 address to Russia's Federal Assembly, Vladimir Putin declared that the word elite had lost much of its credibility. Those who have done nothing for society and consider themselves a caste with special rights and privileges are definitely not the elite, he said. The genuine, real elite are those who serve Russia, the workers and warriors, reliable, trustworthy people who have proven their loyalty to Russia by deeds. It's safe to assume that these words sent a chill through Russia's elite circles, where top officials, businessmen, and military figures have been jockeying to hold on to their positions in wartime for almost 4 years already. And with Putin laser-focused on winning the war against Ukraine, anyone who impedes that goal is at risk of finding themselves on the chopping block. Long-serving officials have fallen out of favor, while ultra-patriotic hardliners are rising to the top, leaving Putin surrounded by sycophants. But with so much power concentrated in one 73-year-old man, I can't help but wonder if this system is built to last. Welcome to The Naked Pravda. Hello, and welcome back to Medusa's English Language Podcast. I'm Eilish Hart, your occasional host and the editor of The Beat, our long reads newsletter covering Central and Eastern Europe, the Caucasus, and Central Asia. Our last issue of 2025 will hit inboxes in early December, so be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. In this episode, we tackle the question of how Vladimir Putin launching a full-scale invasion of Ukraine has changed the rules of the game for Russia's elites. And who better to help us get inside these people's heads than Farida Rustamova, an independent journalist covering politics and power in Russia, and the author of the Substack newsletter, Farida Daily. We discuss who's in, who's out, and why everyone at the top is freaking out, and what it all means for Russia long term. But to start that conversation, we had to go back to 2022. After Putin launched the full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February 2022, it was widely reported that this came as a shock for many Russian officials, including ones in high-level positions. But by March, you and other journalists were reporting that even those elites who opposed the invasion were rallying around Putin. Why did this happen, and what made it a turning point for the political system in Russia?
It's been a few years since the moment you mentioned, and so many things have happened since then. But I think the major reason, and the major thing for Russian elites, the highest ranking officials and people around Putin, who are state businessmen or just people close to him, most of them realize that this is a major turning point. And this is a completely new chapter in Russian history. And I think that the most telling example of the public behavior that shows us a lot of things going on in the heads of the people who were genuinely against the war, but they were not able to express this position or decided not to, is how the behavior of Russia's former president Dmitry Medvedev has changed. To me, it's very clear that the people who had pre-2022, who had more pro-democratic views, just generally more liberal than Putin and his closest circle, more liberal than Russia's silver keys, meaning law enforcement, the army, etc. These people have realized that their era had come to an end, that this is entirely new era. It's sort of U-turn to the era of these hardliners, these hawks, no matter how you call them. These are people who are against any freedoms, are ultra loyal to Putin, have pro-war views, are against the West and anything that is related to the West, and all for isolation of Russia from the West. And this is their time. That's exactly what happened. And the war was the pinnacle of this process. It's not like Russia was a democracy before 2022, right? It was not a land of the free. There were not so many freedoms left in Russia. But still, the war was the sort of culmination of this movement to this authoritarian direction, even closer to totalitarian. And I think that's the main thing that lots of these people have realized.
Sorry to butt in like this, but I'd like ever so humbly to encourage listeners to sign up for Medusa's daily newsletter. I write it every weekday, except on major holidays, or if I'm, I don't know, deathly ill. And what it is a daily delivery of some unique story, condensing an interview, reviewing an article, or analyzing some trend related to Russia and the surrounding region. I keep it snappy and brief, so you can stay informed, curious, and get on with your day. Sign up at medusa.io/en/pages/newsletter. We probably need a shorter URL than that, but for now, that's what you get. Thank you. You're welcome.
And back to Dmitry Medvedev. Not all of them are expressing their loyalty to the regime publicly in order to save their skin. But a lot of them do this in private, and a lot of them decided that they should basically change their entire personality and change their interests and change their values in a way and order their own families to stop going to the West, to stop their education in the West, and all sorts of things. So it was a major change for lots of these people, out of the fear, but also out of other different interests, actually. It's an important thing to understand, apart from the fear that the people who work for the system, they won't get that amount of money anywhere else. Work for the system or around the system, with the system, is a major source of the income. They will not be able to be that rich anywhere else. And for them, for example, to step up and say that they're against the war and to resign or making it public, etc., it's a sort of a suicide. And some people who I spoke to at the very beginning of the war, they used these exact words. So
fast forwarding to today, nearly 4 years into this full-scale war, they've had this U-turn moment, like you said, and then we've seen a lot of high-level officials adapt. What stands out to you as the biggest change or changes in the Russian political elite over the course of that time?
I reported in one of our recent articles about this extreme level of fear, bigger than it was before the suicide of Russian federal minister. Last summer was the most telling demonstration of this.
Farida is referring to Roman Starovoyt, Russia's former federal transport minister. Putin fired Starovoyt in July 2025, and just hours later, news broke that he had been found dead in an apparent suicide. Starovoyt previously served as the governor of Russia's Kursk region, where Ukrainian forces launched a surprise cross-border incursion in August 2024. At the time of his death, Starovoyt was reportedly implicated in an investigation into the embezzlement of funds for constructing border defenses in the region.
People in the system are basically finding themselves in this sort of trap. They are not welcome in the West, and their lives have changed dramatically, as I mentioned before. They used to be able to travel around the world. Their families had been spending a lot of time abroad, and the world was open to them. And another important thing is that they had this opportunity to escape, not in a radical way, not to break up with Putin or with the system itself and say that something critical publicly, but just to, you know, quit and go and live somewhere in some Western country. But now they don't have any of these opportunities. They know that they cannot go anywhere, because if they go, for example, not to Western country, but country in Asia or else, they won't be protected. They will be considered traitors by the Russian security forces and security services, and they are scared of this. They are scared of the consequences. They're subconsciously afraid of being poisoned with Novichok or something else, you know. And they have nowhere to go, basically. Another thing is that the same security services have increased their pressure on Russian officials. They need to demonstrate that they're fighting with the corruption. They need to show that they're fighting with the sort of traitors inside, that they are fighting with people who were not very cautious with their corruption, you know. And the reason for this is that they themselves, they are never being held accountable. For example, what happened with this minister who decided to take his own life. I'm not justifying what he did or that he didn't do, But the fact remains that he was a civil servant. He used to be a governor of the Kursk region, which was invaded by Ukrainian army last year. And the responsibility to protect the region was a duty of military and security services, which they failed to do. But they needed to punish someone because security services, they are not being punished like at all, ever, because they're the real power in Russia. These civil servants, these governors, they are oftentimes the scapegoats. And that's exactly what happened with Roman Starovoyt. He was the federal minister at the moment when he took his own life.
Do you have a sense of how much that is coming from the top down and Putin is saying, go out and find me someone to blame? Or is it a situation where the security forces are trying to figure out what Putin wants or deliver on what they think he wants?
Well, that's a great question, actually. And I wish I knew, but I'm afraid that nobody, literally nobody outside or even inside, you know, is just Putin and know the real truth, their relationships. But I think it's more likely that they still need Putin's agreement to persecute high-level officials. Because for the rest, of course, Putin doesn't have neither time nor will to go into details and to observe all of their actions and control them. He trusts them the most. And it's clear that they can do whatever they want at this point of time, and they will never get punished for being too harsh. No one's punished for being too harsh. If you're in the system, you can be punished for being too soft. For high-level officials, for example, with the case of Roman Starovoyt or Shoigu or others, I would say that this is more, much more that it was either Putin's order or they simply agreed with him on this.
We've seen multiple shakeups in various branches of the state apparatus against the backdrop of the war. You alluded to the demotion of former defense minister Sergei Shoigu back in 2024. We also saw Putin's longtime aide, Dmitry Kozak, resign in September. At the same time, there's this prevailing belief that Putin prizes political loyalty above all else. So if that is the case, why are such long-serving political figures falling out of favor?
I would say that these are two very different cases. And Sergei Shoigu, who is the former minister of defense, he did not exactly fall out of favor because he's still in the system.
Sergei Shoigu's 12-year tenure as Russia's defense minister ended suddenly in May 2024, when Putin reappointed him to the National Security Council. Shoigu's ouster coincided with an unprecedented purge of the defense ministry, involving a string of arrests of senior officials on corruption charges.
Although his clan was cracked down, he himself is still holding a high position in the Russian system. He is the secretary of Russia's Security Council. But indeed, he was punished. And I would say this was the greatest wave of elite repression in modern Russia's history, because they literally crushed the entire clan. And there was a reason for it. Putin just wanted to first punish the army for failing to win this war quickly. But we all know that from our observations of this 25-year rule that usually he doesn't punish people immediately. He prefers not to first fire people, and second, you know, he prefers not to link something that some people did directly with the consequences. That's his style, the management style. The other case with Dmitry Kozak is a bit different, because Kozak did not have any sort of clan. He was one of the rare Putin long-time allies. They know each other for 30 years, as far as I know. He did not have any team, or not to mention a clan. He's a rare example of this sort of independent manager in the system who Putin trusts a lot. There are a few of examples of this type of people. Another one, for example, is Andrei Belousov, who replaced Shoigu as Russia's defense minister. The logic was exactly this, that Putin crushed Shoigu's clan and replaced him with someone who has no team, no clan, no people behind him. So this was the sort of Putin-style checks and balances, you know. Back to Dmitry Kozak, his case is different because he found himself useless up to the beginning of the war. And he was not eager to join this war effort. He didn't want to find himself some position or shield in this entire new reality. I mean, compared to other high-ranking officials who joined this whole thing gladly. Another thing is that behind his decisions to leave the system was his own personal traits. Because, of course, there are a lot of officials in Putin's administration and this sort of apparatus behind Putin, the main administrators, basically, of Russia. There are a lot of people who are useless, who don't do anything, who don't have any particular job, and they just go on and hold this position. Same with Kazakh, for example, like deputy head of the administrations. There are deputy heads of the administration who don't have any great and remarkable jobs and responsibilities. But Kazakh, it's just his character. He just did not want to continue to stay useless. As far as we know from our sources, he wanted to become the sort of defender of the businessmen's rights and in a way to oppose security services and law enforcement in their effort to, for example, nationalize assets or simply confiscate businesses in the interests of simply different clans, actually, not for the interests of the state. He wanted to create this job for himself, but when he got rejected, he decided to leave. And it was a question of maybe pride more than anything else.
The Economist's sister magazine, 1843, published an article last month that offered a who's who of rising political figures in Russia today. For any listeners who are interested, it's titled How to Get Ahead in Wartime Russia. And this article, on top of painting a picture of the political elite as reclusive and fearful, it also said that today the main thing Putin values in people is their ability to help him win the war. Do you agree with that assessment? Is this what you are observing in terms of who is on the rise in Russia's political system?
Yeah, I agree with this conclusion, but I think things are just more complicated than this. So there are people who work in the system who do not express their pro-war views that are not directly linked with fightings on the battlefield, etc., with the particularly military effort, you know. There are people, for example, like the head of Russia Central Bank, Эльвира Набиуллина, or other people like her who just continue doing their job and they're not particularly pro-war in their views. But still, they do help Putin to maintain his war. And I'm sure that they're framing this differently for themselves. Most probably, they're explaining their choices for themselves by the fact that they're helping the entire country's economy not to fall apart because Russian people have experienced this sort of things a lot in the past. Their life falling apart for economic reasons. We know this very well. It is very real that Putin praises and values people who publicly support the war a lot and who dedicate their careers to the war effort and who are helping him in a very direct way. We know that he calls war veterans the new elite. The reason for that, in my opinion, is that he is not very content with the old elite who turned out not to support his war a lot, who did not show any enthusiasm when he started his war. But the reality is, I think that Putin himself realizes very well that this old elite who were not very enthusiastic about his war, they are very powerful. And they control a lot of things in Russia, all in different fields. And he cannot get rid of them that easily. And that these old elites, they are not actually very welcome to those who are now considered the new elites. This is an interesting clash, actually. And I think we're going to see more of it in the future. But the main current trend is that, at least for in the political part of Russian system, is to sort of force these people into the system, force the older elites to embrace them and to recruit these people who are coming from the military.
You were quoted in that article, and you told 1843 that the elite and the government in Russia are preoccupied with how the war will end. Why is this such a big concern for them?
Part of the reason is that during this 4 years already, a lot of them had adapted to this new reality. They have adapted to these, I don't want to say new rules, you know, because for a lot of them, as I said before, they don't know what their new rules are. And actually, the situation is in Russia, in a lot of sense, it's become more chaotic and unpredictable. But the thing that I grasp from the conversations with my sources is that no one knows how the war will end, and they are afraid of more chaos that it will bring. The people who work in the system itself, for example, in the Russian government, they are very anxious about, for example, about the return of the people who are currently fighting on the battlefield, because it's hundreds of thousands of people, if not already 1 or 2 million. And it will be their responsibility to help these people adjust, basically to control them too, because most of them, all of them probably will be severely traumatized, not just physically, but psychologically. It's a very difficult challenge that they're anticipating and that they're feared of. And that's just one thing. Generally, like how the war will end, on what terms, and how Russian society will react. What if those ultra-conservatives who are even more pro-war than Putin himself sometimes, what are they going to do with them? It's a fraction of Russian society. It's a minority, but still there are a lot of them. What if they're going to riot or plot some sort of mutiny like Prigozhin?
Yevgeny Prigozhin was the founder of the Wagner Group, a notorious Russian mercenary outfit that fought in Syria, Africa, and Ukraine. In July 2023, Prigozhin led a short-lived mutiny against Russia's military leadership. He was killed in a plane crash exactly 2 months later.
The Russian system remembers Prigozhin's mutiny very well. It's a trauma. Like, literally, they remember this moment very well when they felt that basically Putin does not control things, that he does not control everything, and the chaos is very close. So yeah, there are multiple things and new challenges that might come after the end of the war. And also, speaking about themselves, a lot of them fear that they might lose their positions. They might be fired. What if there's going to be search for scapegoats? What if it will worsen after the war? What if they decide to punish more people for the failures on the battlefield? The list goes on, you know. So this is the fact is that they have already adapted to this war circumstances, the war reality. And the end of the war is another new reality, which might bring a lot of unexpected consequences.
Do they have concerns about what it would mean for them if Russia were to lose this war?
Yeah, I think this is a major concern for them since the very beginning. I think that a lot of them think that it's a response to the failures on the battlefield from Russia's side might be nuclear. And this is the major fear for a lot of people, including people in the system in Russia since the very beginning. What if Putin will be losing dramatically on the battlefield and he decides to use nuclear weapons? And another thing is that, well, now it's just my speculation based on some of the conversations with the people of the system. So there were news that the books about Nazi Germany was very popular in Russia. They become very popular since the beginning of the war. And I know that a lot of people who are current Russian officials, they did read those books too. I mean, they started reading them after the beginning of the war. And part of the reasons for them to be concerned, what if Russia loses this war, is the question of the price that Russia might have to pay. And they remember that how World War II ended and how Germany was occupied after this, how the entire country was basically ruled by outsiders. And they know very, very well that Germany was divided, et cetera, et cetera. I think there is some subconscious fear of this sort of occupation. Again, I'm speculating right now, but I think that it's just something unimaginable for them. I'm sure that there are lots of other reasons too. I mean, ideological reasons, et cetera, because a lot of these people, no matter how opposed to the war they were at the very beginning, or maybe are still, a lot of them have this view of the great Russia, that Russia cannot lose. So the reasoning is very complicated, but the fear is real.
One recurring theme I've noticed in your reporting is that Russian elites tend to be skeptical about peace talks and inclined to believe that Putin will escalate. Is this still the case at this juncture in the war? Is this still the prevailing attitude among your sources when you ask them about the peace process or what might happen next on the battlefield?
Yeah, I would say that this is a still current sense. The thing is that people who work with Putin and who know him very well, they know that the main thing for him always is his image. And that in an effort to save his face, he, the leader of a nuclear power, won't stop in front of anything. And this is the major argument. People who I talk to about peace talks, they are convinced that there should be a negotiation and there should be some sort of compromise with Putin. While we know that a lot of people in the West think that there should be no compromise with Putin. But people who I talk to, they are convinced that then the war will not end, that Putin will not end this war if at least some of his requests will not be satisfied. That's the main point that I sort of translate in my reporting. It's not my personal view. It's what people inside of the system say. They think that war cannot be stopped if there won't be some substantial negotiations with Putin and substantial rethinking of the global security system. A lot of these people, apart from knowing Putin very well, they remember the beginning of the war very well. And they thought that this was insane, that it was not rational. A lot of them at the very beginning of the war thought that Putin's got crazy because he started the war. I mean, with time, they sort of pushed themselves even to understand his reasoning. But still, they remember these emotions and they remember themselves and their families when the war began. And they remember the trauma that they felt and the crazy shock. And therefore, they understand that Putin will not stop if he is humiliated in some way.
Under Putin, the political system in Russia has always been this power vertical. But over the course of the war, it seems as though political power has become even more concentrated in Putin himself than ever. At the same time, he is 73 years old, and it seems to me that having so much power concentrated in one old man creates a huge vulnerability. Is Putin building a system that can outlast him? Is he ensuring that Putinism can survive without Putin?
I think the main thing to understand here is that Putin is not the great strategist, and he's not a hardworking dictator. The main thing that he is very skillful in is literally holding power, and the rest is details. But still, I would say that the things that he is doing with Russian society, even if it's not planned literally by him or any of the people around him, they're not going to go anywhere completely, even if he dies tomorrow, you know. For example, the people who are currently working in Russia's law enforcement, the infamous Siloviki plus Russian army, those are millions of people, if not dozens of millions, you know. And this is a giant part of Russian society. And together with their families and other people close to them, these are really dozens of millions of people. And this isn't, not all of them are going to disappear if Putin dies tomorrow. And I think this is one of the most, you know, tragic things about Putin's legacy. And that is part of the, reason why I'm not like super optimistic about Russia's future after Putin, because there are just too many people who benefited from Putin's rule, and more importantly, who are practicing violence, who are used to violence, and for whom violence is the only way of doing things, you know? Yeah, the rest of the Russian society will have this major challenge dealing with these people. And you cannot be sure who's going to prevail, because again, this system is flooded by these people, not only, but mostly. There are other things that current Russian regime is doing to make the system outlast Putin. For example, this youth indoctrination, but many other things too. And even though most of the time they're doing that kind of things for their current goals, not for future goals, all of this will have consequences.